Do you ever get a little down in life? Do you dream of that buff body but can't be bothered to actually do the work? Of course you do. We all hate ourselves a little bit. 30 minutes from now, you'll feel so comparatively intelligent, cultured and generally superior that you'll wonder why you ever worried at all. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Flats and Shanks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of our weekly podcast. I'm David Flatman.
I'm Tom Shanklin.
Hiya, Tom.
All right, mate.
Mate, is it? Okay. We are in the Worcester Warriors team room here at Six Ways. It was my turn to sort out the venue because we alternate, and I've been here commentating today, and I'm a little bit lazy, so I've arranged this room, and we can't afford a studio. We can't afford food, let alone a studio, for goodness sake.
Food.
Mate, I don't need... Mate, I get fat from oxygen, mate. I don't need to buy food.
You could put weight on eating celery, couldn't you?
Yeah, I could, actually. Yeah. Actually, a few people today, no joke, here at Six Ways told me I look like I've lost weight.
It's that salmon jumper you're wearing, I think.
Like it?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So anyway, we are here in the team room. It's a proper team room. There are stats on the walls. 23 chairs, like school chairs. Definitely too small for Donica O'Callaghan.
There's like a row of Apple Mac computers where they get to look at their game and look at individuals.
Other brands of computer are available. They're just not as good.
No way as good, are they?
Nowhere near as good. Nope. And if you're one of those anti-Apple people, well, get over yourself, get the chip off your shoulder. It's arranged in a full semicircle. There's a coach's chair in the middle. So it all gets pretty serious in here. And actually, it sort of takes me back to the old days of being in a team room and makes me realise that I don't miss it at all. Do you?
No, not really. Not at all. I mean, this takes me back to my 50th cap for Wales.
God. Here we go.
Yeah. Sorry, mate. Sorry for being so good. but Warren Gatland was coach 2008, and it was my 50th cap against Italy at the Millennium Stadium. I was the only one on the 50th cap, so dream.
Happy days.
Yeah. Not sharing it with anyone else.
Dream opposition as well, respectfully.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And Warren Gatland used to coach Wasps, didn't he?
Yeah.
And, you know, you and I both play for Saracens. We played against Wasps when Gatlin was head coach there. And, you know, there's always a few wise words and a few last-minute words and a bit of motivation in a speech before you get on the bus and you go to the stadium.
Coach's speech dishes.
To play the game, yeah. And he comes in and, you know, he tells us about what we've got to do, a few little pointers, you know, not to take Italy lightly and what have you. And then he said, and it's Shanks's 50th cap. Well done.
You started crying at that point.
Well done, he said. And he said, you know, when I was coaching Wasps, you know, didn't think you were that good at Saracens, you know, to the point where we used to try and target you. But well done, you made it. Good luck, lads, get on the bus. That was it.
He knocked you down, didn't build you back up.
No, that was it. I was like, thanks, mate. And obviously, being a pretty easy target, all the boys just ripping into me non-stop. And because I used to sit at the back of the bus with Martin Williams, hardest boys. I had to walk past everybody on the bus, and they were just laughing at me, saying, rubbish, were you?
Cheers, coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, as soon as you've got someone better to pick, we are going to pick them. So anyway, enough of that, Tommy. What are we talking about today?
Well, we are talking about the 45-man EPS squad.
Yeah.
That's been announced.
And, Rugger.
You know, you'll have a lot of knowledge on that and who should be in, who's not in, etc.
Pro 12, Prem.
Pro 12, Prem, maybe a little bit on the Ryder Cup.
Non-rugger, like that.
Yeah.
We might also have a chat about / quick pop at Big Sam Allardyce. Because I don't know what you think. I don't care what anyone says, Tom. I think our opinion is the opinion that counts on Sam Allardyce. What do you think?
It's the only opinion, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's just your opinion.
What else we got? We're going to answer a lot of questions. Because believe it or not, we've had more questions coming in.
We have had absolutely loads. We can't read all of them out, but we'll do our best to read what we think are the better ones. And by the way, if you send a question in, like one guy did, his name was lovely bloke. His question was 308 words long.
Really?
So I'm sure you're a lovely man, but you need to work on being concise. I mean, that's pot kettle. I know that, but come on.
There are different ways to contact us as well. What's our Twitter handle? Flats.
At Flats and Shanks.
Yeah.
That's my first time, that is.
I know. Nearly had you there.
Website, what's our website?
Flatsandshanks.com. Or email. You can just email us, at Flats and Shanks. So.
Oh, feels good.
Ask us whatever.
Feels great.
We want to answer them.
Shanks mostly likes talking about women and money, but anyway, let's crack on.
So just before we get into the results of the Aviva, the Pro 12, the Rugby Championship and what have you, the Ryder Cup has been on this weekend. And is...
controversial, Tommy.
I love it. I think it's one of the best sort of competitions you can watch. It you know, happens every 2 years. But there's been a bit of sledging going on by the Americans more so. Because obviously in Hazeltine in Minnesota, the Americans haven't won it for quite a few years.
And they don't get out much as a rule.
And they've been, you know, getting right into the Europeans. And I've heard a few things, not everything, but for instance, you know, they've been singing Sweet Caroline to Rory McIlroy. Obviously because of Caroline Wozniak, his ex-girlfriend. I'm all for it.
Unless
it's personal, but then...
Yeah, but I'm not... It's difficult to go to be anti-Sweet Caroline as a bit of a joke about someone's ex. It's kind of like, do you know what? I want to judge them on that and say that's inappropriate. But I know that if I was on an all-day with my mates at the Ryder Cup, there's every chance I'd be singing something like that, and I wouldn't mean necessarily that I hated Rory McIlroy.
No.
But there has been some stuff going on which, you know, they're swearing at Rory McIlroy. They're shouting horrible personal stuff as he walks past. And I think they've gone way too far. And it's got to be said, it's a minority of American fans, but they're a loud minority. And I don't know, I'm up for a bit of banter. I don't mind that. But I quite like things like silence during goal kicks and silence during the backswing and when someone's swinging off, teeing off, whatever. I don't think we should go there. And I think the Americans, the ones who've behaved badly, have behaved really, really badly.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if you're allowed to? So right in the middle of someone's backswing, you could go... or you could shout something. You were allowed to shout or do anything you wanted.
Admittedly, there is an opportunity for comedy gold there.
Yeah.
But I quite like that certain... You know, we're a very kind of open-minded world these days, especially sort of the USA, perhaps less so in the USA, but certainly the USA and us, we're open-minded people and everyone's kind of accepting all that sort of stuff. But I do like... And everyone's allowed to express themselves pretty much however they want, is what I mean. And I quite like the idea that some things remain sacrosanct, like silence during goal kicks, like silence during tee-offs. I think I'm just a nicer guy than you.
What has been interesting is that Sergio Garcia went out to... There's five or six Europeans all dressed in red and yellow. I think they're called the European Guardians.
The Hell's Angels or something?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly like that. Who like the guardians of the cup, they are, sort of thing, for Europeans. And
they're not punters. These are employed by...
No. I think they're just punters.
Sat
in the stand with top to toe in red.
They call themselves the Guardians.
Yeah,
all right.
In blue and yellow gear.
Okay.
And Sergio Garcia went out to him this morning. This is Sunday, so it's the last day of the singles. And he just wanted to G up a bit of atmosphere, and you know, because obviously America are quite loud there. And he said to the guys, look, for every European rookie that comes on, I want you to sing You'll Never Walk Alone. So like, obviously someone like Thomas Peters, Cabrera Bello, first time players in the Ryder Cup, they're going to sing You Never Walk Alone. But they've got some great songs on there.
Yeah.
They've got...
I like that.
Europe's on Fire, David's Love is Terrified, you know, the Will Griggs
fire. Yeah.
It's brilliant seeing that, because you never ever see that in normal golf.
See, I love that. I love all that and the boisterousness between shots and all that sort of stuff.
Paul O'Connell has been out there as well, giving a bit of a team talk, because I think the motto is shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, the anthem. And he's gone out there and given him a bit of a team talk.
Yeah, if it moves, whack it.
Yeah. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah, while we're on the subject of stuff that... I like that. That's good. That's a good reference. I can recite the Predator script word for word, by the way. But anyway...
If they pull a knife, you pull a gun.
Yeah, so let's move on, all right? We've done Ryder Cup. Let's stay off the subject of rugby for a sec and talk about Sam Allardyce.
Okay.
Firstly, depending on your standpoint...
Stitched up.
That's your standpoint. Okay, well done. Now, I get that, and he was stitched up a bit. Well, he was stitched up entirely, but it's pretty easy to not get stitched up. It's like saying the president who has an affair with his assistant has been stitched up because he's been caught. All he's got to do is not have an affair with his assistant, right?
He did not have sexual relations.
Sam Allardyce did not have sexual relations with his agent. Right,
yeah.
But for me, it's arrogance and greed that have got in there. And I don't say this about that many people because I feel like generally you can get on with people. I went to a lunch.
Bet you did.
Another one. Yeah. I went to a lunch in London a couple of years ago, and I was sitting with, or standing before the lunch, having a drink with Lawrence Dallaglio and Sam Allardyce.
Catch that name.
Drop that.
Got that.
And Lawrence Dallaglio and...
David Beckham told me never to name drop, by the way.
So it was me and Ricky Gervais and Bono. And anyway, we were smashed. It was only 11 a.m. No. So we're having a chat, and Sam Allardyce, we started talking about football versus rugby, and it's all fun, you know. And I said, to be fair, rugby guys are all bigger and stronger and whatever, but in terms of actual running, fitness, going for a run kind of thing, there is no rugby player that could live with an elite footballer.
No way.
No way.
The ground they cover.
Yeah, no way. And it helps that they're, you know, the size of our breakfast.
Seven stone.
But still, they're incredibly fit guys. So, and he said, well, yeah, I mean, they weren't before I come into it. And I said, what? Well, before I come into it, there was no such thing as fitness in football. So I kind of looked at Lawrence and thought, he's obviously joking, and laughed. Mm. Nothing. No irony, no self-aware, nothing. And then he's like, I said, all right, so you brought it in. Yeah, well, strength conditioning. And I know that he is largely responsible for leading a strength conditioning revolution in football.
But that isn't
what he said. What he said was, there was no fitness till I came in. And then I think Lawrence said something along the lines of, he goes, so hang on a minute, Sam, you invented fitness in football. And he just said, yeah, I did, yeah. You're like, oh, my God. He was genuinely unpleasant company, to the point where I don't wish anybody ill in this world unless they're hurting people, you know, and then you wish them a bit ill, or they hurt your family, whatever it is. I don't want him to lose his job and have a horrible time and see his wife crying when he wakes up in the morning. I don't want that. But I met him and I thought, you are not a nice bloke. And I feel comfortable enough saying that because I'll probably never hear it, and if he does, I could beat him in a fight.
But... it was an 11-month sort of investigation into him, so it's not just, he wasn't just shouting his mouth off around a table. You know, he would have been groomed by these reporters for a long, long time.
Maybe. I mean, ultimately,
he would have felt comfortable enough that they were possibly friends, or he could confide in them. His agent is a lot to blame for that as well, for putting him in touch with that.
Yeah, fine.
And his last words were that you have to run it by the FA before... He could go out and sanction it, whatever. So you thought that they were his sort of saving words, really.
But he's been in the job 5 minutes. He's on £3 million a year. He's got the job of most.
He wasn't even in the job. He wasn't even in the job when they first started.
No, but okay. So he's in the job for this long, and he's already talking about ways to con his employer. You're like, I mean, to sort of find loopholes and sidestep the regulations of the FA. I mean,
I know. And there's others that come out as well.
Greedy, tacky and greedy. I'm not having it.
The results for the Aviva Premiership this weekend. Anything that stood out for you Friday, Saturday?
Friday kind of went as you'd imagine, with Sarri's putting a load of points on Bristol. They didn't absolutely annihilate
them. They are going to struggle, Bristol, aren't they?
And,
Sarri's were in control... nearly, well, I think for the whole game.
Yeah.
Bristol had two or three line breaks, and it was either a pass and went into touch, or you know, they lost it in contact when Saracens were under pressure. And there's no real world-class players there.
No,
they miss Henson. He went out in the first game. There's no creativity in the backs.
They really
miss him. They're leaking a lot of tries.
I don't pray to anyone, actually, but I hope... strongly that they don't turn into this season's London Welsh, who just get pumped by everyone, and it means everyone else can relax and express themselves a little bit and play a bit more.
Yeah.
But actually, it just removes, and being sort of slightly macabre, but being honest, it removes one of the best pieces of drama from the sporting season. You know, and it's relegation is a dramatic situation and it's emotional and all that stuff. But what it means is that, you know, 3 months from now they could be dead and buried. Effectively, a couple of months from now they're gone. And
yeah.
I really want them to get a win. I really
and the set
do.
Piece is good though.
Yeah, the set. Yeah,
it's, I mean, just, they just lack a little bit of creativity. They don't quite have the caliber of players that a lot of their top six do in the league. And it's always difficult, isn't it, when you're newly promoted, because you can't really plan.
It's the old question around the model, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, by the time you know you're going up, you can't. Everyone else has signed up, and if you want to start signing them really early, then, you know, why is someone who's at a top club going to come to Bristol? No offence, but they might still be in the champs next year, so they're not going to sign a contract, you know. So it's an almost unworkable model, but unfortunately for Bristol, Exeter have proven that you can make it work. Exeter played really, really well at Saints on Friday night. Ultimately, Saints won. first win in three home games this season.
Yeah, I know.
George North was great. The try he set up, I mean,
he scored one just before in the corner, took two men over with him.
Yeah. And then he caught that kick. I mean, firstly, don't kick the ball to George North. Decent idea. Secondly, when, you know, nice little play, bit of ghosting, we call it, don't we? Mikey Hayward nudged Greg Holmes out of the way, who was going to tackle or try to tackle George North, at least slow him down. And then it was on. But what I liked about it was that he wasn't, you might say, you know, an out-and-out winger just goes for the finish. But he knew he didn't have the room to go around Ollie Woodburn. Didn't try and bulldoze him, even though he's bigger than a cow. He stepped inside, had a look, probably took a bit of pace off and put the ball inside to Groom, who fed Hutchinson. And it was just a beautiful try. Probably close to try of the season already.
I think so.
I mean, the Cipriani for Gopoth last week was pretty special as well.
But what's good for him is that he's coming back from last year where he's had a lot of concussions and it must have been a tough year for him. But
yeah,
he's managed to find the form now at the start of the season. And, you know, Wales are desperate for someone like him to be back on form.
Do you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that he's found his form for Saints at the same time as Louis Picamole has arrived, because he is an absolute freak and he carries so much ball. And almost every carry, not every carry, but almost every carry is effective and puts him on the front foot. So George North is operating in a team with proper ballast up front that is motoring forward, very, very strong at the set piece. And he's always going to profit from having someone inside him making yards like Picamole does.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about, we thought Gloucester had managed to turn a corner. But again, it wasn't an epic game against Bath.
It was absolutely awful.
Lost 15-6.
Oh, it was awful.
And you know, Laidlaw missed a couple of kicks, which is very unlike him.
I tell you what, at the beginning of that game, because you wonder what Gloucester are going to turn up, and at the moment, and Greg Laidlaw was absolutely smashing people.
Yeah, saw
he was
that.
Flying around, well up for it. But it unusually didn't work from the tee for him.
What was good was Watson's try. Billy Burns, they saw Billy Burns was defending on the wing. He's obviously not a wing, he's a 10. Gets really caught. Homer just does a bit of a stop-start.
Yeah.
Doesn't do his defender, but just manages to draw in Burns a little bit. Gets out of position. He's not looking at where Watson is. And Anthony Watson doesn't need much room, does he, to squeeze in. I tell you what was interesting was the lift tackle, the ref called it, from Atwood. Personally, I didn't think there was anything wrong with it.
He
landed on a Bath player. They brought him down safely. I don't think his leg was at 90. It was just a two-man tackle. But the ref gave it as a penalty, nothing more. I don't think it even should have been a penalty.
I don't either. They should leave stuff like that alone to a point, I think.
They should. Yeah. Banahan's try was good. And if it was good because you look where he started. It was a scrum and he was sort of hanging around outside the 10, 12 channel. I think he was playing 13 at the weekend.
12 he was playing?
12. Yeah. And, you know, he's obviously looking to do something like a switch or something like that at Laidlaw, who's now at 10. But the play goes on the left-hand side and Bannon just wanders off on his own, round the back of the ruck, right round to the far corner and just gets a little pass in the corner. Like his... That's just a poacher's try. He's just read that game and a little bit of luck in the corner.
It's interesting though, that because a week ago, that is exactly how Gloucester conceded a try to, I think it was Alex Tate in the corner when they lost to Newcastle at home. Taters.
Yeah.
And so Banahan, they've done their research and their research and their analysis must have showed them that Gloucester, the big lads, are not getting around the corner.
There must
quick
be
enough.
Something put into his head for him to do that because.
Yeah. You'd never set off like that with a couple of metres spare, would you?
You keep your units, you keep your 10, 12 and 13 normally together because, you know, after two or three phases where the forwards have a go and normally don't get anywhere, you know, you have to run a play in the backs.
Yeah.
Moriarty, good again at six. We talked about him most weeks, really.
But, you know, it's interesting. He's one of those players that they seriously need to keep hold of.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't let him go and he's the sort of player that could be tempted by a big, I don't know, central contract in Wales or something because...
I hope so for Welsh rugby.
Yeah, I expect you do, but they gotta hang on to that guy. Worcester, I've just commentated now on... I mean, it's Sunday night, as you can guess, listeners, where we are now. Just commentated on Worcester against... who was it? Newcastle.
Yes.
Worcester won, which is good for them. Good result at home.
Were you just commentating or were you like a pundit?
Both.
Okay, I was just wondering, you know, it's quite a smart dress if you're just commentating.
Thank you very much. No, this is what I always wear. But it was dire. It was better than the one at Kingsome, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't good. Let's just move on. Worcester won. Don't think there are any serious injuries, although Cooper Vuna looks like he limped off a bit. Hopefully he's all right. They've got loads of injuries. Worcester got a couple of young lads coming through. Shilcock, Humphreys. Gareth Chilcock
is back.
And he was fantastic.
Fitter than ever.
Yeah, Josh Adams came off the bench. Three young guys in the back three. They're really, really good. But it wasn't a good game, you know, apart from the Worcester scrum, which was good fun to watch for, you know, pretty much only for me and my dad.
Yeah.
Wasps today have absolutely dismantled Harlequins. We could wax lyrical for the next 20 minutes about Wasps alone. I don't think we need to. I think it's fair to say that our best mate from show, whatever it was, three or something, Jimmy Gopeth.
Two, I think, mate.
Two.
Yeah.
We've since then, he's gone on to new heights.
We have that ability to motivate people that much, do we?
Mate, we're a launch pad. We give him that exposure, we put them in the shop window, then it's up to them to deliver, yeah?
Yeah.
He's absolutely flying. He was brilliant. I mean, they're all brilliant. I mean, just find a way to watch the highlights, because Dan Robson's try is, I mean, it's an absolute joke how good that try is.
We've got a question here from Mike Strelly. Hi, guys.
Hiya.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
How long do you think it will be before Dan Robson overtakes Danny Kerr as England number two scrum half?
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
And well, who's England number one then?
Ben Youngs. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think Ben Youngs remains number one.
Number one.
But it's an interesting question. I think I don't know if he's just going to straight overtake him. I think there's room for more than one number two, if you know what I'm saying. I think Joe Simpson also, when he hits form, is a very, very threatening player.
Yeah.
I think Chudley and Will Cliff are both good players at Exeter and Bristol combined, but Ben Spencer, for me, at Sarries, is the best young, best sort of... Well, no, actually, along with Dan Robson, would be the best sort of young talent in England at scrum half. And I think Ben Spencer could well get a lot of England caps. So could Robson. So could Simpson. Although with Simpson, you feel like if they were going to pick him, they would have picked him by now.
Yeah.
Don't know. Kind of get that feeling, don't you? Same with Elliot Daly. If he was going to become a 40 or 50 cap player, he'd have been in by now.
Well, he's sort of in, isn't he? You know, he's been capped, but...
They're going to go with John Joseph, aren't they?
But often you have to wait for an injury. You have to wait for your chance. So
there's
potential.
Yeah, but wonderful player.
Yeah.
Result of the weekend for me was Sale turning over Leicester.
Yes.
At the AJ Bell.
We haven't spoken too much about Sale recently, but they've been not doing too badly.
But they lose at home to Gloucester, and you think, what's going on there? You know. But they just look really sharp. They tore Leicester apart through the middle. Mike Phillips, he went straight through the middle.
I know. Typical fashion, that is. That's what he's always looking for, a snipe himself. And because he's so big and strong and powerful, he often gets away. It's like having another number seven in your team.
There was a little bit of you score three, we'll score four about that
game. It was exactly like that, wasn't it? It was one team scores, the other scores. Beetham, again.
Yeah.
Had a great game last week.
He was brilliant again.
He's so powerful. So, you know, like
he's quicker than I thought, you know.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. His lateral movement from the side, it is really good as well.
He's a big guy as well. He played really nicely.
And there's a bit of talk about this Paolo Odogwu on the wing.
Yeah, now his try, I mean, he's
compact.
He's powerful.
He's low centre of gravity.
Yeah. Hard to get hold of.
Yes.
His try was well finished off the back of the line-out, but really, at pro level, you shouldn't be conceding tries from first phase off the back of your line-out. You've got to put someone there at the back to defend. Mm. Well, whoever's there has got to be able to cover either a big unit or a quick unit.
Mm.
So it's not an easy job. And I remember Sarries used to put me on the back of the line-out.
Because you're mobile.
So mobile.
Yeah.
And I was there for about 6 weeks and just had no defensive errors in 6 weeks.
And another kicking option.
But then somebody realised I was standing there and targeted me, and that was Bath, actually. And Dan Lyle, I think, scored a hat-trick.
Really?
Yeah, it's just where I was. Anyway, that was the end of my
I'll tell you another little
career at the tail.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Go on. Will Addison.
He
sort of moved from wing or 15 to the centre.
Yeah.
And it just seems to be working. He's now first choice kicker at goal.
Well, it's like, right, we need a winger now. Mark Cueto's gone. Got him. Need a goal kicker now. Sips has gone. Got him. 6 from 6 at the weekend.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So, an interesting weekend. Two, I would say, if we can be blunt about this, two crap games. And four really good games at the weekend.
Pound in the swear jar, Dave.
So pound in the swear jar. Sorry, Michelle, our producer, who's not producer, our boss, basically, who's not here, but when we swear, she tells us off.
So the Pro 12 roundup, we had Ulster beating Ospreys in a classic match, mate, 9-7.
Oh, drilled them, 9-7, drilled them.
Ulster top of the league. Connaught had their first victory, 28-15 over
like
Edinburgh.
Yeah. Like it.
So hopefully that's turning round the corner and... last year's champions can.
Well, they're going to win the thing,
table.
Now, won't they? They're going to win the
I
thing.
Think so. It'd be worth putting a bet on.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
I covered a game for the media at the weekend, so a bit like you in a
what
way,
game?
Really. Blues v Leinster at the
BT. What media?
Just media, mate. Just it doesn't
what
matter
media?
What it is.
You're not getting
you
away
cover
with
media.
It.
I cover media.
What media?
We're both legends.
Who were you there with?
Oh, all right, I was covering it for this podcast.
You went, okay. So you just went to the Blues. Did you go in a box to watch it?
I mean, I'm not going to the stands. Who goes in the stands to watch a game?
All right,
when you get free drinks and food in a box.
All right, so you covered it for media. You actually went when you didn't have to.
I was with Gennaro AV Productions, so went with them.
Is that your company?
Well, that's not mine, but I did a bit of work for them.
Okay, fine. Gennaro, don't trust them. Just joking. So you're in a box, and do you need a pass, or is your face enough?
No, just a face, mate. Just the face and the arms and the chest.
Come on in, Alfie. Come on in, they say.
He was actually there.
Was he?
And you often don't see us like in the same room,
let alone
stadium together.
You asked me to take your word for it.
He was parading 100 women around the pitch.
Oh, typical, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is typical him.
He does this thing called Alfie's Angels.
Yeah.
And he's got 100 women fit to run the Cardiff Half Marathon. So he was walking around and they were just doing a lot of point clap waves. You know that when you finish a match?
Yeah.
Point clap
point
wave.
Clap wave. Yeah, I know that person.
Doesn't matter who it's at.
Hey, you. Oh,
yeah.
What are you like?
And there he was.
So Blues lost, didn't they?
Yeah, they lost 16-13. Had a chance to win it right at the end. The referee, I don't know, you can't often blame referees, but he wasn't great throughout the whole of the game. You know, he penalised the Blues a lot for sealing off. He didn't penalise Leinster a lot of time for that. And what's your view on this? When a player is trying to run back in to the defensive line and the scrum half blatantly throws the ball
at him. Oh, it bugs me. Bugs the...
Well, Josh Navidi got yellow carded for that.
I got yellow carded for that when I played, but it was just because I was really, really tired.
But the Blues had an opportunity right at the end and they were picking and going right on Leinster's line and then one of the backs came in and... Backs really can't pick and go, can they? Unless they're incredibly powerful, like a Tuilagi or a Roberts or a North.
Banahan or something.
Yeah, they're not really going to get over.
And best pick and go back ever.
Oh,
ever.
Go on then.
Ben Cohen.
Yeah.
Playing with you against Sale, I once missed 4 tackles in a game and all 4 were on Ben Cohen and I got dropped.
Were they the only tackles as well?
I didn't make any.
Do you have any positive?
No, I didn't make any. I had 4 opportunities.
No, but anyway, getting back to that. Picked them, you know, get held up over the line. 2 minutes to go, a couple of reset scrums, penalty. You know, Leinster end up winning it.
We got a question from Ianto Calibra on Twitter. Yeah, are the refs in Pro 12 corrupt or incompetent? Now they're clearly not corrupt. There you go, corrupt. Done. They're all criminals. That's quite an aggressive question.
Yes.
I quite like aggressive questions sometimes. What do you think? Are they incompetent? Are they? Is the standard lower?
They're not corrupt.
Of course they are.
But possibly the standard is lower. I think there's such a variety of refereeing standards. I think in the Pro 12, and you know, it's possibly something they need to look at. But it was particularly poor, I thought, on the weekend. It's not always poor. And the Blues obviously had chances to win the game, but it doesn't help with the inconsistencies of refs. Do you know what I reckon? How would it slow the game up too much if a specialised, I don't know, say ex-prop came on to ref scrums?
Depends on the salary, really.
And,
oh, sorry, you're not offering a job. Would it slow it up?
Just put it out there, mate. That's all.
I think almost if you add an ex-prop or two, whatever, sitting, or three, get 3 of them.
Okay.
And they sit in a little room or in the truck in the car park where the TMO sits, and you...
They could feed the ref info through an earpiece.
Well, they can just see a scrum go down, ref blows his whistle, and we've all got 5 seconds. I'll give myself the job. We've got 5 seconds to hit...
Another one.
Red or blue, whatever the teams, you know, whichever one it is, this is who should get the penalty, bang, and he just awards the penalty.
Okay.
And we can sort the description later, but then they need to pay 3 of us. I mean, it's not going to happen. I just think,
cash.
Unfortunately,
cash.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
but I think that there's always been areas in rugby that are open to interpretation and are a bit grey. And I kind of think you don't want to make it too much more transparent. I think you need to let the boys get on with it, and there'll be nothing to talk about soon because every decision will be right.
Let the players play.
Let the players play, baby. But there'll be nothing going wrong, you know. And what are you going to talk about when you get home?
Yeah. What are you going to talk about?
What are you going to talk about?
What, when I go home?
Or when you cover games for, like, when you cover games for media, what are you going to talk about?
Media.
When you go in a box and have a sandwich for no media at all.
Talk about probably what series are good on the TV at the moment.
Mm.
Have you seen Stranger Things?
No, I've seen one and I'm going to get back into it.
It's like a cross. It's really good. It's like a cross between The Goonies.
Yeah.
E.T. and Stand By Me.
Wow. Okay.
Set in the 80s.
Okay, noted.
It's really good. True story as well.
Yeah, okay.
It's about aliens. The Rugby Championship happened on the weekend as well.
No point, mate. No point. Apart from what we've already said, Dane Coles and Agustin Creevy are by miles the best hookers in the world, and there's no point in playing against the All Blacks.
South Africa won, though. End of their three-game losing streak.
Francois Lowe was mega in that. Do you see that?
No.
I guess I'm biased because of whatever.
I saw it, but...
He was amazing. He was brilliant.
Monier Steyn was good as well.
Yeah.
First start in 2 years.
Yeah.
I do think he's the better 10.
Do you?
Out of him and Jantes.
Yeah.
Jantes. Scored all their points as well.
Yeah.
Four penalties.
Yeah, he does a good job.
Two drop goals.
No, he does a good job.
New Zealand beat Argentina 36-17. Not much of a shot there.
No, 29-3 or something at half time, wasn't it? Something like that.
Yeah.
Joke.
Exactly.
They're a joke. They're a joke. But in a good way.
Very good way. So, Dave, the 45-man elite player squad, or EPS, if you like, has been announced.
Or the England EPS, as lots of people call it. But the E stands for England, guys.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, interesting. Well, there aren't many players that aren't in it because there's 45 of them.
Yeah.
You know, so there's loads of players in it. The inevitable talking point from an English standpoint is Danny Cipriani's exclusion.
Yes.
For me, it's as simple as it cannot be a rugby issue. It can't be, no, because he's been playing brilliantly all season and last season and most of the season
before. I agree with that.
So they just don't like him. And
But it's probably over him or Alex Lazowski.
Lozo. Yeah. Lazowski, Lazowski, Kaplowski. He's a New York cop who works outside the law.
A dirty tash.
But he's
up and coming.
He's up and coming, and he's not going to be ahead of Farrell and Ford if they're both.
No, he's not. But they're rewarding a young player who's been playing very well for the best team in the Premiership, a place in the squad. And I suppose if they're looking at Ford and Farrell, one of those two are going to play over Cipriani every time. So what's the point in having him in the squad when you can bring youngsters through like Lazowski?
Yeah,
you know the New York cop.
The cop, NYPD.
And the amount he'll learn in that environment will far outweigh probably what the amount Cipriani will learn in that environment.
And Eddie Jones spoke during the announcement, I think it was then, I've seen the quote, I think it was from that press conference, talking about he doesn't just select on talent and ability, he selects on the makeup of the guy and sort of what he's like as a lad. And, you know...
He's brave. And a few of the guys have said he's brave. You know, he's not the biggest in the, weight-wise...
No, I'm talking about Cipriani here. So I'm saying that's why he's been excluded.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know Danny really well, but I know him well enough. And he's, you know, he's a nice lad, nice bloke. But clearly they have the inside track at the club and at Sale and Wasps and all that sort of stuff. And they obviously regard him as, you know, perhaps too much hard work. It cannot be, maybe they think he takes too much time to manage or it brings too much attention of, sort of celeb attention to the squad that they don't want. I don't know. I'm guessing. I'm speculating.
I like it. Keep going.
But I know Paul Gustard reasonably well, and I know Steve Borthwick really well. I'm not saying it's them that's made the decision.
Yes.
But they're not fashion show kind of people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So basically, you're saying that's why.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But it's a complete guess. But it cannot be. I say that with confidence because it cannot be to do with rugby because he's just been sensational. And Nathan Hughes was brilliant at the weekend against Quins. He was mega and he's back in great form. And just imagine a back row with him and Billy Vunipola in it. As long as you've got a workhorse at seven, you get a Rob Shaw or someone like that.
You need someone unbelievable at the breakdown, I think, with those two.
But the point that Eddie Jones has said recently, why they put Haskell in there as just a tackle machine, is that there isn't an out and out ground worker in the Prem, and I think Matt Kvesic's very good, but there's something they don't like about him. Not as a bloke, as a player, they don't want him.
I picked him at the start now, Tommy Taylor.
Yeah.
At Wasps.
Yeah, really, really good. Really, really good.
He's in, which is good to see for him, I suppose. Rocket Aguni.
Yeah, he's a freak. And if he's used properly, I mean, he got one cap and then got discarded because he got a bit of a knock and didn't work out very nicely for him, that. But he's a proper weapon if they use him properly, absolute weapon. And aerially, I think he's right up there with Israel Folau. And he's, you know, in terms of sort of catching them bombs, he is
special. Those bombs.
Diffusing those bombs. I was diffusing's hitting the ground, catching his jump, you know, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, he's potentially a really special player for England, I think, if they use him properly.
So apart from Danny Cipriani, no other real shocks?
There are lots of players you'd kind of put in if it was your squad, but I think in terms of the big talking points, that's the one for me. And it, again, has to be something personal, doesn't it? So we got so many questions from people that we thought
loads. We just
loads, like seven. We thought we'd take some time to actually answer some of them. An interesting one from Yestin Evans. It's a very, very long question, so I'll sort of paraphrase it for you.
Yeah, please.
Are there any teams you'd ever secretly wanted to play for as a player, but you couldn't say so then, that you look back and wish you'd played for? Shanks, do you wish you were part of that Ospreys back line they had back then? Or Flats, do you ever feel like you would have enjoyed being part of the ABC club with Jono and Benny Kay behind you? Tommy, you first.
Can we say the All Blacks? Quite like to have played for them.
Yeah, World 15 would have been nice.
Yeah, used to practice the hacker all the time.
Yeah.
I'd probably say the Scarlets.
Would you?
Yeah, yeah. They've always been like a running rugby team. They leak a few tries, but they also score loads of tries, you know, from their own half, from their own line. And they were, you know, back in the day when they had Stephen Jones, Dwayne Peel playing for them, Scotty Quinnell.
Yeah.
You know, if there was another team I'd play for, it'd be them. But obviously, I played for Cardiff and that was a team I wanted to play for, and that's the reason why I stayed there.
And you say you're moving out if you go to Scarlets, doesn't it?
Not really, no. I think most, you know, most
leave the caravan where it is, can't you?
Most of Scarlett's boys live in Cardiff anyway.
Yeah.
There's not much going down there.
Leave the horse and cart where it is, can't you, mate?
Yeah. What about you, mate?
Well, I mean, in terms of the ABC club, I did, after 3 years at Bath or something like that, I got offered a deal up at Leicester, which you might believe or you might not, but it's true. So Graham Rowntree was 1 year out of retiring and they wanted him to take a back seat and that sort of stuff. And I spoke to him about it as well. And I was close enough that I went for a look around and met Richard Cockerell and Simon Cohen, the CEO.
Had a little sniff around, did you?
Had a little snifter. And then a coffee with the lads,
Sappuccino.
But really, the truth was that, and I said to Richard Cockerell at the time, you know, Bath is where my heart is and whatever, and I really wanted to stay there. And they sort of came up with the goods, as it were, and I stayed there. So I did have an opportunity. They signed this absolute nobody called Marcos Ajerza in the end. So they probably...
Is he an actor?
Yeah. Don't know who he is. No. Yeah, he's... let's just say they accidentally upgraded there and did all right out of that deal.
Yeah.
Much better player than me. But I think if I could go back and play for one other team, it would have been Toulouse. I think that would have been... Just from as a kid, I supported Bath and Toulouse, you know, so I got to play for Bath for a long time, which was great. But I really... You know, I used to ring my agent and just every now and again and say, look, my contract's up at Bath. I want to stay. If they don't want me... Have a look around in case they don't want me.
Yeah.
And I used to say, any chance of Toulouse? No. No, they can have whoever they want and they don't want you, Fatty, was generally what came back.
But there might be space at Grenoble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there might have been, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But there were a couple of French contracts offered in the end. I got, you know...
Oignacs.
Yeah. Yeah, Calais. Yeah. for the Rossbeef Arms at Calais Sunday League, but it's cash in hand. So, and I didn't make it to France. I nearly went to Stade before my last Bath contract, so I got quite far down the line with that. And it was quite an interesting one, actually. Well, you might not... You'll know all about this, Tommy, but the listeners might not.
Go on.
So I spoke to Stade Francais, met the boss there, it was Michael Checker at the time, in a hotel in London.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know if Bath were going to offer me a contract or not, and you can't put all your eggs in one basket. You have to cover yourself because it's your job. So I wanted to stay at Bath. Bath were being really slow. I didn't know if they're going to offer me a contract because I wasn't that good by then. And in the end, Stad came through with quite a nice offer and said, you've got 48 hours or it's gone. And that's quite the first thing that made me panic, because...
Not long, is it?
Bath in those days didn't do anything in 48 hours. It took them about 3 weeks to sneeze. You know, that's a lot of the reason why a lot of players left there, was because they're just useless at organising contracts. So in the end, I ring the CEO and it's got to be done by 4 p.m. on the Monday, right?
Okay.
It's 5 p.m. Paris time. Yeah. And it was 3:56, and I was 4 minutes away. And if no one had answered this phone, I would have signed 3 years for Stad, and that would have been that. Nobody would have cared, but I would have signed for them.
Yeah.
And I rang the boss at Bath, and he said, I thought this was all taken care of, Flats.
Yeah.
I was led to believe it was all taken care of. I said, it's not taken care of. So I've known this guy a long time, so I'm not being a prima donna. You've got to tell me, and you've got 3 minutes to tell me whether I've got a contract here or not. And if I haven't, I'm going to go. He's like, of course you have. I was under the impression you signed. How long do you want to sign for? And I said, 15 years at 900 grand. It didn't work. But anyway, we got it sorted there and then. He's like, right, well, get the paperwork done tomorrow, but don't sign for Stad. We don't want you. This is your club and we want you here. And I said, you know, because this is the CEO, a great bloke, but he's not the head coach. And I said, look, I want the head coach to want me too. And that was, I think, Geach at the time. And Geach had said, you're 100% saying. And
yeah,
it's just the admin, mate. The admin was so slow that I thought, I'm going to lose my job here. And I'm going to be knackered. So I was just about to say yes to Stad, and Bath said, don't sign it, we'll sort you out, you know.
I remember signing for Cardiff again, I think it was 2007. And it's always, I never liked to go into a game when the contract was there to be signed, because, you know, you could just injure yourself or what have you. And, you know, you might break your leg and the club might take the contract back, even though it's there.
Yeah.
And I remember 2007, playing for the Barbars against South Africa, and I signed it, you know, in the Marriott Hotel, or whatever it was, the Hilton Hotel, Park Lane.
Yeah.
That week I was rooming with Shark Brits. And this is before he came to Saracens, but he was obviously still playing in South Africa. So he was a bit of an unknown in the UK.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he thought of me, mate, because when you play for the Barbars, you get cash in an envelope. That's how they pay you.
Yeah, you declare it, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Put in your tax return. Got to. It was my first ever time I played for him, so, you know, cash and envelope was quite an exciting thing for me.
Yeah.
I wanted to show off a little bit. So I put it all over my naked body and asked him to take a photo. I don't know what he thought of me at all. He probably thought this is the weirdest thing I've ever had to do. I sent it to all my boys. Crack a week here, boys. But we got a question here, a bit of a social question from at Humpo 15. Humpo.
I know Humpo, actually.
Do you?
Yeah, I do, actually. I gave him, he's a good bloke. He works with Leakey at the RFU. Matt Leak, former Saracens and Wasps fly half. Dodgy geezer, thoroughly dodgy geezer.
Do you remember we had a wrestle in
Oh, you had
Tenerife.
A fight, didn't you?
Yeah,
you had a fight.
Yeah.
Oh, it was great, this. It was great because we went out to Tenerife and I'd gone back.
We dressed as firemen as well, didn't we?
Yeah, dressed as firemen. I'd gone home early. Just
sounds rubbish, but at the time, honestly, it was amazing.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
I went home early for personal reasons and I think I wasn't feeling very well.
Yeah, you were.
And I was asleep in the bedroom and I heard this kerfuffle outside. And one of those boy wrestle that turned into a man wrestle. Shanks had a flat out fight with Leakey on all day. It was great.
You know, like when you fight with your mates, you don't really want to punch him as hard as you can in the face, but you just want to be like aggressive and wrestle him to the floor.
And
stuff. He was actually quite, he was like a little Jack Russell.
Yeah, he was, yeah. I remember, this, you know, I don't want to, you know, sort of delve, I don't want to write off.
Obviously I won.
Obviously filled him in big time.
Yeah.
I happen to know that Leakey listens to this podcast because he sent us a couple of tweets.
Yeah, put it this way, it's a little blood on Leakey, nothing on me.
Yeah, I mean, so he was cut up bad.
Yeah.
I mean, he was. It was such a shame what happened to him on that trip.
I said, where's your tool?
What tool? he looked disfigured before that, but it's been worse since.
I've been down B&Q, got tooled up.
Tooled up, yeah. It was a proper middle-class street fight. It was like one in a... Is it Notting Hill or whatever it is, or Four Weddings and a Funeral, where it's just like...
we stood back to each other and walked 10 steps and went for it.
Turn around, oh God! It was all... Yeah, they had to put their red corduroys on first. But I remember being... I had a girlfriend, a long-term girlfriend, so it wasn't...
You were going steady.
I was going steady. I was dating and going home from a night out and actually going to...
Were you at the stage where you could poo with the door open?
I'm never at that stage. No, sorry. I'm never not at that stage.
Okay. Don't have doors.
I was raised by wolves. And open plan living, yeah. So...
Carry on, Mowgli.
Went to bed and we were going to sleep, right? And I heard this like rustling at the bottom of our bed, my bed, and all my kits at the bottom of the bed, you know, my training kit, whatever. I hear all this rustling. And it's like... A Leakey saying, for Christ's sake, what's the point? And it's Leakey stands up. He's at the bottom of the bed and he's been waiting at the bottom of the bed. I don't know what he was hoping to see, ladies and gentlemen, but Matt Leake, Google him, deviant. But he was waiting at the bottom of the bed and he just sort of stood up at a right strop and stormed out because I'd let him down by going straight to sleep.
He's resourceful. I'll
deviant.
Give him that.
Absolute deviant.
Right, anyway, Humpo wants to know, best team bus journey you've had?
Oh, that's a good question.
It is a good one, isn't it?
It is a good one. There are loads, right? The one that sticks out for me is, I can't remember what year it was, but we had a big away win somewhere. I was playing for Bath. We had a big away win and a long bus journey.
Oh, right. That's good.
I'll tell you what it was.
Obviously remember that one well.
Yeah, I remember that one well. And who did we play? Doesn't matter. We all got on the bus and we were straight away on the source and it was right. Someone got on the microphone. Andy Beattie, we called the Beast, got on the microphone.
Yeah.
And he said, no one's driving. Everyone's leaving their cars at the club. We're all getting on it. You know, team do. And there's a couple of lads who didn't drink and they got told where to go. But they were kind of tasked with looking after us, actually. So
yeah,
that was fine. And it was all getting loose.
Do you remember one day, actually, we had a fine court session at Saracens, and because you're obviously one of the big drinkers and would party all the time, you weren't allowed to drink alcohol. You had to do your fines in Coke.
It's worse than that.
In Coca-Cola,
The reason is worse than that, right? The reason is actually, we went on a pre-season tour. Oh, God. We went on a pre-season fitness tour to Derby. Do you remember that? To Derby, right? And I remember we're getting on the bus and Francois Pienaar was our captain, head coach and chef and whatever. He just ran the place.
Yeah.
And he said he had to drive up in his big car, in his big Merc. He had to drive up because he had to leave early to do some business stuff, right? So he said, who's going to come with me? So Julian White and Robbie the Muscle Russell went in Frankie's car with him. And we all went on the bus because we thought, we want to get on the lash on the bus. We don't want to keep it serious in his car.
Yeah.
So they drove up to Derby with a boss, you know, I bet some really, really strained chat in that car.
Oh, proper
stuff. So strained. Whitey and Robbie, properly antisocial mutes. And they got there and I remember Whitey, if they followed the bus up, Whitey falling out of the car, laughing so much that he had to take a knee. He went to his knee on the floor and he was wheezing. Frankie had a completely straight look on his face. And Frankie had been like, he was reversing to the spot and Whitey was like, oh, careful, Frankie, I think you're pretty close there. Don't you worry, this car's got sensors. And bang, he went straight to the side of this car and it's like, wee, wee! He smashed into this car. And Whitey's like, Frankie, you're on it, you're on it! Robbie Russell's son is like, you're on it! He lifts this car off the ground. And Whitey just absolutely pisses himself and drops out. But anyway, on that trip, we had this night out. And it was like, right, all the young boys, all the young spunkers come in here. And it's probably me and you and Rob Thirlby, I think it was. And Ben Johnston and Adam Jones, John Dawson, those guys, Matt Cairns.
Tony Rock,
yeah. So it was like, right, chop a pint. And it was like, we ought to chop a pint of any pint you want with an egg in it.
Yes,
so I was like, right, let's do
it.
It
was like a country pub, wasn't it?
Yeah, get an egg, break it in, chop it. And got to the end of it. And I don't mind a drink, but I don't like downing pints. It's just not something I can do very well.
Really?
And they were like, sorry, lads, you went too early. You got to do it again. So we did it again, and they were like, a bit of spillage, you've got to do it again. So we did a load of these pints. Thirlby lost the plot, but halfway, like before we started, I challenged Frankie Pienaar to do the drinking with us.
Yeah.
Right, so this is getting a bit convoluted now, but he did a load of pints, and he was drinking hard. And I remember watching him, and Julian White saying to me, watch Frankie, just watch him. He's on the edge. And I watched him, and he was like walking around trying to get away from the boys. And he went and leaned on a fruit sheen and he's pretending to put coins in. He's like, they're not real coins. They're not real coins. He's hitting the buttons.
He's looking around.
He's just looking around. Then there were no coins in his hand. They're not real coins. He's going to go. And then he went and he sort of popped sort of really inconspicuously into the gents. And he wasn't well. Anyway, we got back to, we had to do a review back at the club where it was like, what did everyone think of it? And my group happened to be a lot of the young lads. And the general consensus was, not necessarily mine, the general consensus was that we were forced to drink and we didn't like it.
Drinking culture and rugby.
Drinking culture. So I stood up and said, we felt, because I spoke on behalf of the group, I didn't drop anyone in it, because I didn't share the opinion. And the Kangaroo Court came around and Brendan Reedy, the Samoan prop, the chief, he's like, bro, you hate drinking so much, you're drinking Diet Coke all day. It's like, awesome. And I was going to argue with the chief, but no one argued with the chief. So I learned, every time that you had to neck a pint, which was a lot at Kangaroo Court, I had to chop a pint of ice-cold Diet Coke. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal.
I don't know what the fancy dress was, but that's when you come dressed as... remember, you shaved your head and you were like the guy from...
Sinbad, I was.
Yeah, oh, right. I thought it was a guy from Kickboxer.
You know? Tong Po. Tong Po.
You'd sellotape.
I bit my head and face completely and I got... But I got a load of Loctite. I got this black ponytail, a load of masking tape, but a load of Loctite glue and glued this thing to the back of my head.
I'll put that on Twitter this week so you can see.
Yeah, good times. But anyway, that isn't the bus trip.
Yeah.
That is not the bus trip Humpo wants to know about. The best bus trip for me was... anyway, after this victory with Bath, we come back and everyone's on the sauce and we start playing Take the Back Seat, and it's kind of one of those games that everyone talks about and doesn't play that much. And I was at the back, just on the way to the back, because that's just where we sat. So was Danny Grucock, and there's a few big lads up the back there, Pete Short, and there's some sort of heavy lads up there. Matt Stevens was always like, he would like turn the music off. He turned off the team music on the bus.
Yeah.
He's like, turn the music off. I've got my guitar. Somebody get my guitar. Turn the music down. Let's have a sing. And we're like, so we called him Sos, because he was, Sos was S-O-S, son of Shep. Shep was John Mallett, Shep to Mallett, and he had a massive head. Matt Stevens got a head like a cow. Call him son of Shep, Sos.
Yeah, okay.
So we're like, Sos, sit down. We don't want to hear your guitar. We want to hear the tune. And he's like, right, if you're going to be rude, I'm going to take the back seat. And he like, he's a big lad. He piled up, mate. He finished. He had a tear in his trousers. He had no shirt on. And he had 6 stitches in his eye when he got absolutely filled in on that bus.
Did he get to the back seat?
He didn't get to the back seat, no, not from memory. But he had to get past some lads who were pretty motivated to stop him.
See, I'd say our best one we've had is... We're probably a little bit more civilised than you Bath boys.
Yeah.
We played South Africa in 2008 and they wanted to keep us off the piss, basically. So they hired a castle bus, which is just a bus which just has a bar on it.
Yeah.
Toilets, the lot. It's all blacked out, all windows. It's just an alcoholic bar.
The nightclub that moves. Yeah.
And so we just drove around for about 3 hours on there, doing fines non-stop.
And they wanted to keep you out of town, you mean?
Well, I think they just wanted to keep us out of trouble, more so. But yeah, we end up going to a nightclub anyway.
Of course you did.
But it's brilliant. 3 hours, all the boys together. Bar on the bus, toilets on the bus, drove around, literally, probably a ring road.
What more do you need?
And then we went to a nightclub and had a gun pulled on us.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Where were you again? South Africa, did you say?
Joburg,
yeah. You wouldn't believe it over there, would you?
We had security, though.
You wouldn't believe it. Right. No. Question from Thomas Buckle from Twitter. Just wanted to say, really enjoying the podcast. Thank you very much. Question for you both. Who is your strongest ex-teammate in the gym? Now, this is a really nerdy question, but this is the sort of stuff that sports fans like. I like this stuff.
Yes.
I like stuff like that because I'm, you know, macho, whatever, and I wear pink jumpers. But who's your strongest ex-teammate, Tom?
It probably would be Gethin Jenkins.
Right.
And not necessarily to look at him, you think...
Yeah.
He is. He's a big bloke. He's a prop, but
he's a big guy. Yeah,
he's incredibly strong.
Is he
natural strength? I mean, there are some strong boys now in the squad, but from my point of view, from players I play with, Andy Powell was up there as well.
Yeah.
You know, he liked to warm up on the halfway line, as we talked about. But Mellon, incredibly strong legs, back, shoulders, chest.
Yeah,
just one of those natural. And he was never like a. He was never like a Paul Wallace type of prop.
Not ripped up and
Kian Healy
wigsy.
sort of type of. But just huge amounts of strength.
And fitness, by the way.
Yeah, and...
Fittest guy ever, prop.
Fal Felice as well.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, Fal Felice is the strongest.
Fal Felice.
So he'd be doing...
To Alfal Felice.
He'd be doing bench press and, you know, our fitness coach, Tristan Bevan, at the time, say, Fal, that's not enough, put some more on. And he goes and, you know, normally, putting like another 10 kilos on, he put 25 kilos on each... On each end of the press.
Mate, imagine, right? I'm playing loose head at Baths with Dave Barnes.
Yeah.
And Big Foul turns up. And, oh, we got this new prop. He's a tight head. We're like, happy days. He's not a loose head, all right? Because we want our jobs. And he plays tight head and he's pretty good. And he's unbelievably strong around the field, in the gym. I remember him being... He was 126 kilos, whatever that means. 126 kilos. And his body fat mills were exactly the same as Ollie Barkley's.
It's the size of a rhino.
He's the size of 4 rhinos, but he was a huge guy and he was as lean as exactly the same as Ollie Barkley, 28 mils of fat, whatever. I don't know what that means, but I remember it being freakishly low.
Bacon.
His fitness scores, you're like, well, he's not going to do that. He's all power. He's fast twitch. Fitness scores, brilliant. Power, amazing. Strength, amazing. Skills, amazing. Then one day, I was playing against Sarries for Bath, against Cobus Fisagi. It was one of the worst days of my career. I got my head fully shoved up my arse. And they brought Fow on.
Yeah,
I barely played loose head before and gave Fisagi a properly hard time. I was like, oh no, my career at Bath is over.
Yeah.
This guy's literally twice as good as I am. And then Cardiff came in and offered him shed loads of money. And it was great.
He's nearly 40 now and still.
I know, I was at Cardiff the other week.
Top of the table of power, strength.
I was so happy he left. Yeah. I remember doing.
Glad I thought of him, actually.
Yeah, it's a great shout. And he was a big old Tongan with gold teeth.
Loves the Colonel, KFC.
Yeah, he loves it.
Yeah.
But it don't go on him. There's no fat on him. He's an absolute freak.
What's yours?
Fow would be up there.
Yeah.
Big Fow. Julian White, very, very strong. But in the gym, Pete Short. Second row. Yeah, okay. Freaky specimen. Kind of strong everywhere, you know. Shouldn't have been as strong as he was because he was 6'6" and his limbs were so long. But geez, he was freaky strong, freaky specimen. Now, we've got a question from Chris Tannarella. Now, he's, by the way, first of all, before he asked the question, he said, now I've heard the nickname Llama for Shanks. I can't see him as anything else. And good, I'm glad about that, because he is very pallid and he does dribble. I'd like to discuss the Welsh centre partnership, says Chris. Now, do you think that... Basically, do you think Wales need to drop Jamie Roberts and replace him with Scott Williams if they're to carve up in seasons upcoming?
Well, there's three great centres at the moment playing there. You know, there's Scott Williams, John Davis, Jamie Roberts. And it all depends on what style of play Rob Howley wants to do now. He's coach.
He's a gaffer.
Yeah, he's in charge now. So, you know, if they want to continue with playing the gain line battle, the same sort of style that Wales have played since 2008 when Gatland's come in, then Jamie Roberts has to play, really, because he's the one that gives them that go-forward ball off the top of the line-outs, off the back of the scrums. He's the one that gets them over that gain line, gets them on the front foot, allows the forwards to play the same way. You know, they want to play the same way and same way to shorten defences. You know, whilst other teams look at different ways of shortening defences. So Wales want to shorten defences by literally onslaught of going the same way. So defences tire because they can't get round the corner quick enough.
Yeah.
You know, other teams break down defences. So they want to get a separation between 10 and 12 or 13 and 14.
Yeah.
So it's how Rob Howley wants to play. If he wants to play a more expansive game, then you have to have another ball player in the centres. Mm. So Scott Williams, out of all three, is probably the better ball player. But then, you know, you have to drop one. John Davis is back on form. Great player. Jamie Roberts, great player defensively as well. A lot of people forget how good he is defensively.
We spoke about the All Blacks before, but about this in particular, I think. But they kept four centres happy, but now they've got other guys coming in and you think they kind of manage it.
But I also think it's quite easy to take two or three players out of that All Blacks team, and you could probably put anybody in and they would still function because the whole team functions so well. I think it's a bit harder when you're doing that for Wales.
It's quite a unique dynamic that, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. They could stick you or me in there, mate, we'd be all right.
Yeah, where would you be, 12 or 13? I think 13, you're more creative, aren't you?
Yeah, I'd be a dummy line. Mind you, that's all you'd be as well.
Yeah.
So I reckon that's about it, Shanko. We've covered pretty much everything and a bit more, and I, for one, am famished.
Yeah, I'm pretty hungry too.
How do people contact us, mate? Remind them.
Well, they can contact us on Twitter, at Flats and Shanks.
Yeah.
What's our website, Dave?
It is flatsandshanks.com.
Or email us, contact@flatsandshanks.com. And we're sorry that... You know, we couldn't bring a guest to you on the phone this week, but you know, we're going bigger and better next week, aren't we?
We're going big, and we've done four, and we've only got two mates each in reality, so we've kind of done those. So we're trying to get mates of mates. One quick word of thanks again to the two Toms, Parsons and Vale, here at Worcester Warriors. They've been absolute legends sorting us out this room. Good on them. Hope you've enjoyed it. See you next week. Ta-da.